care of it. Pretty much intellectually, I'm almost done with all the major things that I have to make this summer, and that the resin is the one point I left out specifically, so you could still make it. Although everything I'm doing today is designed is hopefully going to set that up. So that's why I'm doing more crystal stuff today. You can just do the intellectual stuff in your own for the next few days. So we noticed in the cases that Dr. Rosen sent us about, for the mayor nominations, so one of the issues that came up was the extent to which authors are responsible for the titles that editors put on their work. So this chair actually comes out of a similar story, while at one point I got really, really into, thanks to the wonderful book by Amir Sternberg called The Codex of Biblical Narratives, I got really into the use of literary techniques to study Tanakh. I'm going to talk about that tomorrow night when I look at Genesis literature. And I read an article about how really cool I found it, that to be able to use literary techniques to study Tanakh. And one of my friends titled the article, In Praise of the Bible Critic. As a result of that, at least one of the Rosh Yeshivas spent that had their major Shabbat talk the personal denunciation of me as a godless heretic. And when I went to point out to him that in the article I specifically denied the things that he accused me of, he admitted that it was possible to read my article that way. However, since I wrote some of us there, and everyone who wrote some of us there was Mukhtar Kapikaris, right? It was presumed heretic, therefore there was no obligation to be done to judge me favorably. And therefore, even though my article could be read both ways, he found no reason that he was obligated to read it in the manner which he could have been. I found that really quite astounding. And it inspired me to write an article on Modasha, on the relationship between teachers and students, which was grounded in this text. And because that conversation, which even though the person who said it had never been my teacher in any direct sense, and was unlikely to come so, it seems to me that since we were officially an institution, therefore we were all coming in and they were older men, that the obligation of the relationship inhered. And it seems to me such a betrayal of the nature of teacher-student relationships for a teacher to be able to say to a student that I have no obligation to judge you favorably. And I tried, I read an article called Rabbis and Books, which was about teacher-student relationship, which was built on this sugya. And this is still the sugya that I think about when I try to think of what it means to be a teacher, although some of my favorite students have argued with me since that my reading is entirely incorrect as is my pedagogic theory. So we'll go through it, we'll see what you guys think. Okay, this is in the context of the discussion of Elisha ben Avuya's apostasy. I remember the whole long discussion of what drove Elisha ben Avuya into apostasy. You can look at all the interesting theories there. You can read it as a driven leaf, or a cool dramatization of some of the theories.
You like that
because of driven leaf? I think that is a really cool portrayal of the type of personality which is driven by certainty. I don't think it has any real warrant in the fact that the revolution of Buddha was this quest for certainty, but the personality type that is driven by certainty and never notices what my friend Ari Greenberg calls the epistemological abyss. That you notice that you can't actually start from first, that all your first premises have to be assumptions, or you recognize that, you can't figure out what the odds are, the probability is correct. So that personality type is one I meet quite regularly, and I think Ezra Leaf is a really good portrayal of that type of personality. I think the portrayal is true to life, right? It's not just an Elisha ben Avuya. So after that whole discussion, as the Gemara goes through the whole discussion of Elisha ben Avuya and the relationship with the mayor and all that, we were asked the question, Rabbi Meir, Heki Gamar Torah Mikumi Dachir. How could Rabbi Meir learn Torah from Acher? The Amar Rabbi Bar Barchana, Amar Biyotnan, Mai Jistir, Kisitech Lanyish Nurdah, Israel, Hashem Yitir, Kimalach Hashem Tzakotim. In Domeh HaRab, Kimalach Hashem Tzakotim, Yivakshu Torah Mikimu. Rav Rakhana said that teachers can only learn, great students should only learn to teachers who are angels, or who appear to them as angels, or if you want to do a really analogical reading, whom they can imagine as angels. And that tends to be the reading that that I took, was whom they can imagine as angels. And so the thesis that I took out of this piece, in my article, was as follows. Teachers are only allowed to learn from teachers who appear to them as angels. Teachers are not actually angels. Therefore, students can only learn from teachers if they have a sort of willing suspension of disbelief. So the question is, partially what that means is that the teacher-student relationship is built on students' willingness to interpret apparent imperfections in their teachers in the most favorable possible way. Because if you look at your teacher's actions objectively, there are always going to be flaws, and your teacher won't be an angel, and you can't learn from them. So therefore, the authority of teacher is derived from students' willingness to judge them favorably, and it follows that a teacher is unwillingness to judge a student favorably, right, was a breach of their relationship, and is poor.
How do you
imagine
that lesson?
Interesting. Wow, that was an easy one. It was obvious to me until a few minutes ago. Still is, but I'm waiting to convince that the value, right, learning is only possible if you implement the value of judging others favorably. And if teachers don't model that for students, on what basis can they expect students to write the grant to them?
Even though
that might
be true, that's just not
true. Nothing
wrong.
I'm glad we got you.
No, part of it allows you to meet your own side.
Yeah.
And that's what we're going to do. So you see, it's inherent in you to
introduce your own. Oh, look at your student as angels. Very nice. Very nicely done, Michael. But I wish that they were doing it, that's not true. Exactly what you want to say.
I mean, if it totalifies an educational model, it disappears if you're right.
Totalifies an educational model, why?
If you have to judge your students favorably at all times, right, you're never really in a position to tell them what they're doing is wrong. I guess you can maybe gently. But if they, you know, like if they persist in whatever it is you're telling them not to do, does that mean, like, is that just destructive to the relationship? I mean, is that what you'd argue? I don't know.
Interesting. Rob, what do you want to say?
I'm coming from kind of a shot of the initial off that is surprising me. Hugely seems, I think he used to argue that as long as you have a moment at which you get inspired by the teacher and they seem like an angel, then that is enough to sustain your relationship even through the times in which they don't seem like an angel. I don't know if this helps at all, but I think you could maybe say that that in both directions, that you simply need to have that moment of inspiration to then get through times like trouble, because then you can preserve trouble as a value, and yet still not have this obligation to have them seem like angels at all times.
Involves an attempt to change the other person. Maybe you're only trying to change the amount of knowledge and they have not their moral personality or whatever, but there's something imperfect about them that you're trying to repair. That's what the teaching is about. So it might be if we're already perfect, we can dissolve the program.
Oh. This is entirely referenced to 10th grade, because that's why I was my code in my 10th grade resume. Well, I probably was in a little bit of trouble, so I realized he was just wrong. Go on.
It is the point of teacher. If the teacher has information or skills or whatever the student needs, and the teacher is going to help the student acquire that, does that mean by a teacher that there are things the student ought to have and doesn't? So the teacher may need to be able to see the student having perfect potential. So if the teacher sees the student is already being perfect, there's no point.
This is a person advertising for the conference that we're running in a month or so, besides the teacher. But I think, like, the question is, here's the way I would respond to the reciprocity issue. The obligation to judge someone else favorably does not generate the obligation to see somebody else as an angel, because some people judge them as favorably as you want. Right? Don't get past the minor cherub stage. So what I argued was that the concomitant is that teachers have to behave well enough that students can sustain the illusion. Students do not, right, it doesn't say that you should only teach students for like angels, but students do not have an obligation to sustain illusion that good. It just means that teachers have to see, teachers have to give their students the benefit of the doubt, but if there's no doubt, then you're entitled to tell your student, right? Because it's not judging someone unfavorably, right, when they do something unambiguously wrong. It does mean, for example, that if you can interpret a student as plagiarizing or not, right, you have to give them the benefit of the doubt, It means generally, when students have plausible alternative explanations of their behavior, you need to accept them.
But if something is already wrong, and you just
Yeah, they didn't belong in the same institution. Right?
I don't see how that differs
than your other conversation. Right, so the premise of my article was, guess what, we're still in the same institution, you're still taking your salary, they let me in. It's not right, you know, you have to deal with that. Now that, of course, is a false premise.
Yeah,
The thing is, how, you know, you have a whole class of students. And that, right, that you say that you don't relate to that, I wasn't the only student who was from the last day. If you talked about the serious one done in the Midrash, it was a pretty high percentage. So look, there were faculty members who explicitly said that their job was to save the students from the institution, and they couldn't save all of us. Yes, a bit. Out there was an apostate. Right? So Malach is opposed to Acher was a sinner. How can a mayor learn from Acher if Acher was a sinner? Just right, can't he only learn from teachers who are like angels? Right, so ultimate meanings of Malach are not going to fit. Right, there's a clash with Acher. Yes, sir.
What if you read the word Malach as being more like Shmia? In your contrast, it's Shliach from whom? Shliach from, Hashem versus Shliach from Greek philosophy.
And that's too clever to me.
It's not only Greek philosophy. I mean, I'm going to offer so many things from Greek music. I don't know.
But from people in general.
But some of this laws of Octave are internal, right? You know, when you see Metatron and he comes up with no Gnostic theology, I mean, something like that. I would be hesitant to do that. Okay. It's interesting. You guys don't see the correlate as automatic. Still obvious to me.
If all you're saying is that you have to be done off foot, then that's the general obligation everyone has.
I think it's intensified in the teacher-student relationship. That's the, if you say that students who don't implement that value, if students don't implement that value, then they are not allowed to learn from you. Now you could have a self-impression that you really are an angel. You don't need to depend on this. As we talked about the power of the glory yesterday, most of us don't have that. But if you don't have that, and I certainly don't, then you should be conscious continually that it takes an active will on your students implementing this value to be willing to learn from you. And that, to me, it generates the obligation in me, for me. Interesting that you don't see that when I have a guest over.
I'm sure that won't be the only example I can talk with.
I think...
I have to do what you say, because you're the teacher and I'm the student, but you don't have to do what I say.
This is clearly something that fails to do it properly. Well, alright, now we'll have to think about it. It's always really obvious to me that no one has ever made that argument before. It does not mean it is wrong. We have to think about it. Usually when people disagree with me, we can't learn from teachers, right? If you see teachers as angels, then they're distant and irrelevant, and you can't possibly learn from them. And I have a particular conversation I had with your friend of ours, where I mentioned this, that you live in our house for a long period of time, can't imagine how you could still see us when I still see us as teachers. And so she said, no, you're totally backwards, but it's only this law that they can also learn from people because they humanize you. Apparently in the classroom, I'm perfectly capable of appearing and joining. And that's still a, right, you know, that ties into Wittgenstein's, in the famous comment about whether the disadvantage of making the effort appear as amplified statues or petrified piety in relevance versus reverence, right? Yes, sir?
Can you say that, we should judge a student fairly, even when they're down the house course?
Yeah. Same thing.
What?
Yeah.
So there's a rash in Thomas.
Yeah.
Which I'm not. Loving tomorrow. Where they can still get angry.
Yeah.
You're getting angry with the right
stuff. You're getting angry?
The right stuff.
For the sake of Sarah.
For the sake of the rash, says that then they have to judge a student down the house course.
Oh, did you read it?
Yeah. I'm going to be right.
Interesting. He says that it's certainly Rabbanan, not necessarily on the part of the teacher. He may just, the rabbis have an obligation to judge each other with Kapskut, as opposed to teachers judging students. Or even that everybody has an obligation to judge scholars favorably.
What are you talking about? This is not just about students.
So certainly Rabbanan is a student?
Yes, because Rabbanan is the whole party. Probably conveyed in the
who has the obligation to judge in favor? I don't know that it says his teacher.
The
superior is his peers or his method. Right. Maybe when the young noble, do this, right? Right. I like it. Thank you very much. I'm not convinced that it relates specifically to teachers. And that's worth discussing. Okay. So that's, that is How do you guys feel about this stuff? But now they're all the reference questions. Do you think that it is better for teachers to present themselves as best as possible unflawed? Or is it a wise pedagogic strategy to reveal flaws? Whether or not you have them. The first part. The second part to be, I'm going to start working on that flow. Yes, Alicia. Do you think relevance and relevance is the same axis as perfect and imperfect? That you gain more reverence as a function of perceived perfection and relevance as a function of perceived flaw?
No, I think you just don't lose, you know.
I'm not talking about distance versus closeness. That's what I'm trying to clear that, right? I'm not talking about distance versus closeness. I'm talking about protection versus imperfection. And it may be that they're thoughts of the same. Do you find it possible to make somebody relevant, I guess, even if they're perfect? Do you have any difficulty learning? Right? Or do you just say, well, like, man, I can't get anything from them because they're just totally different kinds of people? What I need is, you know, to find out that every once in a while they're tempted to kick their puppy. I don't know why I don't have something that's the same magnitude. Yes, sir.
I think that students, by definition, are looking for role models. So to present the picture of the reverence for the teacher is going to give the students something to strive for. If there's an occasional flaw, then sort of gives hope to the students that they themselves can, in fact, be able to achieve that level that they see their teacher at. But I don't know that necessarily you need to have the ultimately relevant teacher or the ultimately reverend teacher relationship. And I think you run risk if you start to go more on one side than the other.
How do you like these other comments? Yes, Michael.
Can you have a little bit of clarification on what kind of teacher we're talking about? Because this is statement from first grade. Now, it's not clear that her main task is to serve as a role model.
I understand we're talking about a teacher of Torah, let's start with that, right? And although I'm happy to define Torah in the broadest possible sense. The premise here is that you can't treat teachers of Torah just as comparing information because then the character would be irrelevant.
Is it assumed that every teacher of Torah is also teaching Torah?
I don't know. He doesn't explain why. Right? He just says that if your teacher does not appear angelic, then don't learn Torah from them.
We're sitting here in the hall, you know, also.
And we want to if you're talking to the parents, we're talking about by reading the text itself.
Right. What is your alternative reading of Rabbi Baruch Yo, from Bar Chanan and Rabbi Yochanan? And I don't think that we have to reconcile with the mayor's wife at this stage, right? But in my cousin, they just put him straight, right? Nobody disagrees. I mean, he's not disagreed with it. He's actually the premise. He's saying, how can the other mayor have done this, even though Rabbi Meir is a Tana and Rabbi Baruch Hanan is a Mora? But this one, I think, is pretty clearly framed. And Rabbi Baruch Hanan is right, Rabbi Meir is wrong at this stage. We're not, right, we don't consider throwing it out. So what's the alternative reading of him?
It's
asymmetric. That issue. Okay, well, I'm not dealing with the symmetry now. Not dealing with the symmetry now. I'm just now I'm going to adjust what the teacher level.
Yeah, I understand. I apologize.
Yeah,
okay, fine. So, yes, I got off. Sorry.
Okay,
yes, done. Okay, I'm very torn right now, because on the one hand, I would suggest a compromise that perhaps the relationship has to start with reverence, and as time goes on, relevance can develop. Basically, it's important to earn the respect of your students before you show them that you are human, and only at that point that it's perfect. On the other hand, I can't remember exactly where, but I have a remember in Gemara that you're supposed to start this year with a joke.
Yes.
And so...
Well, at least a less serious advice.
Right.
So you have to deal with, like, my friend Mushroom and say, this piece of wood, they're not funny. He was first these years ago about why the alleged the jokes there exist. The joke that Yehuda starts to hear them off aren't funny.
Oh.
Is it because, part of the fact what it is because Chazal had no sense of humor, or because we are not built to understand this sense of humor?
Okay. So, from that, it would seem the exact opposite, that you have to develop that sort of tension, that you have to develop relevance first before you can have reference.
I think you're understanding what that does. Okay, yeah.
I'm torn because from my personal experience, I think it's the opposite. But the guard seems to
say. Okay, well, you can let a joke turn out there to establish personal relevance or just to set the mood. If that were the only problem.
But I guess I'm thinking this more in terms of an emotional perspective, that it's about the balance between awe and personal
connection. No, I think it's an interesting argument. But I think you can resolve the contradiction. You may not want to resolve the contradiction that way.
Right.
And you can resolve the patient to it. Yes, Tamara.
But I don't think that imperfection necessarily means, like, having a more personal relationship or vice versa. I do think that it can be traumatic for a student to see their teacher role model in a very inhuman, flawed viewpoint. And when they see their teacher doing something wrong, they really, every Torah that they learn from that person is just, like, meaningless. And that's not so far-fetched. I mean, people are totally destroyed when they find out that someone who they revered as a Torah scholar and who really inspired them to learn something specific or to be involved in more Torah, and then when they find out that they did something horrible, or they have a horrible character flaw, or they don't keep a certain mitzvah to a proper degree, they do find it totally destructive, and there is no way you're going to recover from that. So I don't know if on the one hand, I am tempted to say, yes, it's important to find a balance, but on the other hand, it can be destructive even to show a certain microscopic amount of imperfection to your students, because that might be enough for them to just push them over the edge and just totally, disregard any Torah you thought of.
Okay, yes, Jesse.
So I'm more confused, and maybe I speak out a second and miss something. But, I mean, what I meant when I said, aren't we sitting here in the middle of the Havamina? Like, we're working very, very hard to justify Rabbi Yochanan, but isn't it just that Rabbi Yochanan is simply wrong?
No.
And that Torah stands independent of...
Well, let me see. That's the we go on.
That's how
I always think of it. Okay, but that's okay. But it's like, that's nobody challenges him, so it's hard to read it as a dominant voice of the Talmud.
I mean, not necessarily the singing thing either.
Okay, good. So maybe this is the thing we just rejected. That's possible. Right, Michael and Deborah.
Sorry. Reminding of my own experience, most of the time, when I encounter a teacher or a writer trying to figure that I find to be, inspiring or I do start with reverence in that sense. But without fail, there's always flaws there. And it's actually a very powerful experience to find the flaws in the teacher that I'm in. Sometimes I can lose interest in the future, if that's an optimal one. Just try to pause in the future, just made it so that a human ego maniac comes to coverage and I just can't deal with that.
I'm glad you're still here.
Or if it's permission for us to be ego maniac.
It's really powerful experience to see, in my experience, just, you know, to say, like, oh, I really don't want to be like that teacher. Mm-hmm. Everybody, but I really just aren't going to do that. And dumping them aside is, or her aside, that's actually a really strong, I don't know, I don't know, but at least in my experience, that's really strong.
And do you ever get tested?
It depends. As a model for character, their ability to teach them. I don't have a whole lot of role models. Yeah.
Sarah?
Can I put some categories between behavior and personality?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's relevant. I can relate to that person, I can use them as a role model because I can perceive myself as similar to them thing, comes from the perception that the other person wants to do bad things and is able to overcome that. Because if you think that they never want to do bad things to begin with, you can't learn anything from their failure to do so. You have to think that they want to do what you do in order to learn that you could also not, you will also overcome your desire. And I think that the relevance comes from the belief that the other person has made to her, whereas the destruction of the relationship comes from the belief that they gave into their own. So it may be two different kinds of flaws, and it may have two totally different effects.
Okay, so it's important for me to talk about fantasizing about taking something. So they should never let them catch me.
If you were giving us a motion about taking something, then you would be in a better moral position to tell us not to kick puppies.
I'm not talking to you guys, I'm talking to myself. I just need to, when people say, slap yourself to yourself, you alright, sorry, please take it.
Well, I'm not entirely convinced by that. I mean, just because there's some personal experience, I can think of at least one figure where, you know, me and my friends and all. And the reason I say it, but I'm saying, like, for example, the way people relate to him, definitely Yeshiva, from experience, they really, you know, there are many people who view him, you know, who can't fathom any imperfections in him, and despite that fact, consider him very relevant in terms of him as, you know, that picture of inspiration. And
do you think he doesn't have
these
abilities? Like, the
Ron's vision of him? There are many people who relate to him the almost oddly succeeded, exotic, transcendent, you know, figure just because, you know, many people, you know, what, you know, even if he does have flaws, you know, as the case may be, you know, when people relate to him, and just from my experience from doing that for 2 years and watching people relate to him, where people, you know, they really don't perceive any flaws in him. Even if he does have them, you know, they
even if there still be a flaw, though.
There may be a flaw, but maybe. But if they look at him and, you know, I have really many friends, you know, they don't think they can ever see him, they don't think they can ever come close, and yet they're inspired to learn from him just because he acts as that model, that they want to become something like, you know, they don't think they can ever actually reach it. And, you know, I don't think they, you know, I mean, I might not have believed that that could be possible, but I hadn't seen so many of my friends who really relate to him in such a way, you know. So, you know, I don't know why it necessitates having to really think, you know, he's fighting the same thing in battle that I am, as opposed to saying, you know, maybe he's different where I can't be, but, you know, if I could get somewhere near where he was, or take some lesson from him, I'd rather grow up from that.
Are you thinking that's a good question?
Right. I haven't really been that way also, but that wouldn't be all right, that would be crazy. That may be true. Well, you know, at a certain point, you know, if there's enough people who are like it in that way, there will be some people who have that type of...
I think the whole time it has to be good, right? You know, the whole time that they're affected by being ready, right? It's hard to claim that someone's inspired. It's hard to argue against it.
we're sitting here talking about like being an angel, and so I don't know what the point of reason or what being an angel means. There's like the angel that you see that's like beautiful and white and has wings, and an angel that like some people define as an awful state to be in because you have no free will and you're just at God's will at all the time. So I don't really know what it means by being an angel.
Good. That I think is a fair point also, we're assuming a metaphor. All we know is an angel is unlike others.
One of the ways that people over the seem to like religion is more than just this like idyllic figure is mobile, and it's like that kind of like outside his like teacher persona, just knowing that like he's normal with his family about his life, like stories like that, and that also like helps to like make some sort of relevant to this stuff.
Okay, I think so that's kind of the other one.
Becomes more scaled. And that becomes like who you're, you know, essentially, you know, being, you know, because of that inner change, because of, you find yourself on that person, and that's kind of, you know, what we're talking about here. As opposed to any style of teaching. And I think that's becomes a connection to the man and author there.
So you only apply it to Ronnie Lovelock or something like that?
I think so.
I think it's true that we know to some degree that we devalue the ordinary teacher-student relationship in a sense because we have the grade system and so nobody really sees teachers in the same way. Whereas in Rabbi Yeshiva or Rishabha, you tend to pick somebody. Interesting. I guess the two underlying things for me, one, and this is what the conference is about, is that nobody seems to say, well, teachers should just present themselves as they are unless they just make up their own mind. And I guess, like, none of you report a conscious experience of looking at a teacher and saying, you know what, I can understand this teacher one of two ways. If I understand him that way, then I can't learn from him. If I understand him that way, I can. And the only way I can keep learning from them is if I choose to learn, I choose to look at them in that way. I do think I have experiences like that. And I think that there are situations in my life, some of which are relevant to stories we already talked about, some of which are relevant to stories we'll talk about, in which I make efforts to do that and I can't. Where I say, you know what, I can find some way of understanding this and I can learn from them again. And I can't. No one else seems to have seen that experience as central.
I think that if you put that together with what Adi is saying, I think that's true in terms of like people can work on it by doing who want to go to shoot everyone and shoot us from 7, so that you can feel like, okay, if I look at him this way, I'm not going to be able to look at him this way, and I look at him just like a tough problem, so I'm going to learn a lot, so I'm going to do that. But if you're looking at it as like a tough problem, that's where you're not going to be able to do that, because that's going to be a different relationship. Like every, it depends how close your relationship is going to be.
It was one share that I used to, I probably still went to relevant health students a lot of people they were not permitted to go to. Because it was us who went to Taurus, and it was us who went to Taurus, and the person who taught it. But... That's where they get to the challenge, right? That maybe this is just against the original contact with. I'm different to that way. But then it's okay, I'm creative mind. But interesting. Okay, let's go through the figure this week. So Rish Lakish responds by saying that the mayor found the pasuk and darshened it, which seems to imply that it's possible for teachers to just be a pass-through. Right? God says that it's not, or you're listening to God's mind, not their mind, and you can find a teacher, right? You can just find teachers who, right, and Torah just passes through and they have no impact on it at all. And, right, yeah. Quotes an alternative pasuk, and at this point, apparently, after Rabbi Chanina, maybe Rabbi and Rish Lakish together, the Gemara says, whoa, but Rabbi Yochanan had a pasuk, and Rabbi Yochanan's pasuk seems to contradict Rish Lakish, slash Rabbi Chanina's pasuk. How do you reconcile it? The Gemara ends up saying, right, so you can't reject Rabbi Bar Chanan, you can't reject Rabbi Meir, because each of them is now written in Sukkot. And Gemara doesn't take the option of saying that one of them must be misinterpreting the Sukkot, right, so there must be a way of reconciling it. So it says, okay, one of these Sukkot is talking about a Gadol, one of them is talking about a Katan. So the question is, what do we mean by Gadol and Katan? And which one is which? Okay, so how do you guys take it? Yes, Arisha.
Because I think that you can have people who are fully grown adults, intellectually, maturity-wise, who are still might have difficulty separating between the teachers, a teacher's words and a teacher's actions. And you can have potentially, kids or teenagers who can separate. So I think that you have to address in terms of the ability to separate words and actions.
Okay, I'm not so bothered by the order, because I don't think that's consistent in some ways. So I think my teacher would say that the rule of life, right? Last in, first explained, and I don't think the order is just positive. Yes, Anisha.
And you also, what happens to say for the time who were able to, in some kind of have more natural expression, more natural form, that in some ways they can learn from someone who actually don't have to learn, because they're not going to pick up on the difference. That's what it is. For someone who's older, who picks up on that discussion, greater, can understand great discrepancies. Right? You know, have to be more careful about your actions and words line up.
Okay. Any other alternatives? Yes, sir.
Is it possible that it's being on purpose?
Being on purpose, yeah. So?
Meaning, you could have grace who are children, you could have adults who are small.
Okay, it could be that great souled people can learn from flawed teachers.
I'm sorry?
Great souled people can learn from flawed teachers. And
meaning you could have 1, 2, 3, 4, and also some crosses in the middle. And it's a matter of the student needs to find the right teacher for him or her, and then the teacher finds the right student.
So if you need to find a teacher who is like you on the scale, or a teacher who balances you on the scale, like the greater your student, the greater the student, the less great the teacher has to be, or the greater the teacher has to be.
From a literary angle, I would say that's exactly why it says one is talking about a Dreadnought and one is talking about a Kaizen. Because for me, at this phase of my life, I might need the role model. But last week, I really just needed a bunch of information for me to make my own decisions. And I don't know that I significantly changed, maybe, you know, intellectually from last week to this week, or physically, or whatever, like, whatever your standard's going to be for growth. And I don't know that I wouldn't necessarily go back to that place another week. So I think that, especially with one of the points of learning, is that there's a constant fluctuation of up and down. And in one circle you can be the god goal and you're a big fish and you go to the next town over and all of a sudden you're a small fish and a huge pond. I don't want to get too deep into analogies because then people start to question and say, well, but I think that's exactly the nature of education, is that it's going to be different from every person, and as you try to find what to match up. But I think that perhaps what you're seeing from here I'll think back and root in the process. But I think it's a certain amount of self-awareness that's required of education, and so to be able to approach who your teacher is going to be.
Then
there is a conscious choice there. Okay. I'm still looking at this tomorrow. It reminds me of my own experience, just about the relationship between a son and a father, and as a young person, you look at your father and like, oh my god, that's perfect. He's like the most amazing thing ever. And then there comes like that, like, growing up point where you realize the flaws in your father, and like, that can be like a very powerful experience. Somewhere as well, like we're saying that, like, finding flaws in your teachers. We have that, like, deeply when you start realizing the flaws in your father. And I would just, like, go on to say one last point that I think possibly ultimately, I would suggest that you ultimately, the distinction between reverence and relevance dissolves. And I'd like to suggest that distinction should be dissolved at a certain point, that there might be some sort of dialectic between the two that can ultimately be overcome, where at one and the same time, one can recognize the flaws in one's parents or one's teachers, and also find that to be the most awesome thing ever.
Okay.
Jonathan?
The only question I was raised was textually is, you know, in this kind of Hubbard, it's always trying to answer however many are different. So if the data is purposely ambiguous and, you know, depends on the situation, it doesn't answer the question tomorrow. As much as, you know, I might be inclined to say it's true, the Gemara is trying to answer however many are different. And that word Gemara is supposed to describe, it is supposed to explain why the mayor was able to work out them for that matter. I mean, theoretically, you know, presumably not. I think the easiest way to tomorrow is that Abu Ghazal is, you know, justifying the mayor's action. And that's the case to say that it's purposely ambiguous, doesn't fit with the flow. If this, then there's no answer.
Okay, I just want to point out the casuistic method, right? You say Abu Ghazal is a ton. It doesn't tell you what the borderline is because it'll, you know, the rest of you.
Right, it's not.
Without self-esteem, not to be cunning, and if you know, not to be known. So So the resolve the sexual problem without telling us what to do, but ambiguous in that sense.
Ambiguous in that sense, but I'm saying, Martin, that is, no, just to say it's meant to be ambiguous. I don't think it's meant to be ambiguous. It seems to be trying to answer your question, but we may not be able to figure out
it's a methodological point I'm making. Is that when you solve a contradiction by positing that each side of the continuum extreme, you are in a sense deliberately leaving open what happens in the middle.
Right? Not one that would go back and forth.
No, I don't want to go back and forth. But practically, you can eliminate all threats. Practically, you can say
the suggestion that was raised that you
read it. I think you're literally playing with but claiming the substance is right. Substantively, you're going to end up in the exact same position. Right. You might argue that Dylan always X and Tom always Y, and then it's like, we'll go back and forth. General methodological. Okay, it's Michael, I have one last thing to say, we've got to do this finish.
Is there a possibility that
Hubble
got a lot of
lessons
talking about the teachers?
Yes.
Okay.
Good. So that's the last part I want to close with. There's a lot more to say about this subject, but I really want to finish on time. So I have quite as long a day as we had left Wednesday. the way I like to read this subject, I confess that I have not, as I recall, found the precedent for it, is that Abigail of a Katana doesn't refer to students or refer to teachers, and the point of it is that if you're going to learn from a teacher whose flaws you can't overlook, then a teacher darn well better have something to say that nobody else could. Right? That tends to be the way I respond to students. But, I kind of learn from so-and-so who is, when I know perfectly well that so-and-so has, right, did X, Y, and Z, which I can't in any way count to them. So the question I usually ask is, are there things you can learn from them that you could not learn from anybody else? Is there something about being the experience of their classroom that has such value to it that it's worth doing that? Whereas, if you simply have a choice among five or six teachers, and some of them have obvious flaws and some of them don't, then why would you bother? Why take the chance? That tends to be the way that I answer the question after advice. Okay, there is much, much more to do with this figure, to tease out the difference between the various metaphors explaining our marriage division, and to discuss the dialogue between Peter Robert Barshela and Eliyahu HaNavi, which I always think is one of the really cool moments when all of the Benedict tradition got thrown into jeopardy. It turns out that God, because all of the tradition comes from the mayor, and God doesn't quote the mayor. That means that God doesn't quote any of the tradition. Right? That's why this was the centerpiece of the Shira and Dangerous Dominion. This is the most dangerous avenue at all. Right? This is where if you go for the more bidding combination, it turns out that God just thinks it's wrong. But that's when you get to convince God. I think that's a really cool little song. We can't do that today. We're going to break today. We will come back and resume with Dr. Rubin teaching at 3. And you can hang around with Amy Josh or throw frisbee in some place or own free with white gold or whatever may be in. So thank you very much. Also, by the way, you should tell me your opinion. Does this go on the web or not?